Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Dad, coach, husband, those are the private top for Guy Shiraki. But somebody who's worked in the public and private sector, Chester County. Are you an award-winning coach, Guy Shiraki, Broad and Liberty writer, columnist?
Leading off for the Philadelphia
Phillies. Leading off for the Philadelphia Phillies, he wishes.
I wish. My baseball career, unfortunately, ended when finally a coach was honest with me and said, Guy, 5'7", single-hitting, right-handed people do not play first base. So that's why I turned to coaching. And I don't know if I'm award-winning, but a lot of the girls I coached are award-winning, and I'm proud of them.
Oh, so now we're not talking like life or career coach. We're talking actual sports here. Guy's a coach or something.
He's a girl dad coach.
I didn't know that.
I have coached girls travel in Little League softball for this is the start of my 26th season.
Wow, Guy, that's awesome, coach.
That's awesome.
I love it. We have practice Friday and a whole lineup of games on Sunday up in Bristol. So I'll be looking for those signs on my way to the field. But once I get to the field, I change into coach guy and no, you know.
Are you to that point now, guy, where you're coach, where you're coaching kids of ex-players?
I'm not there, but I am at the point where girls I coached 10, 20 years ago come back and help me coach.
Oh, that's
nice.
Awesome. That's awesome.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
So
it is.
We're talking about, we have a loaded board, so we'll talk about last night's debate first, just get your reaction. And if do you mind taking a couple calls, Guy? Some of our callers?
Sure.
And then
absolutely.
So we'll be interactive. And then I do want to get, obviously, to some of your latest Broad and Liberty columns that we love, and we want to get into those. But just first, your initial reaction to last night's debate.
Yeah, I thought and said it during the debate, J.D. Vance won in a knockout. He won in a knockout, and it was clear that he won. And it was clear yet again to every honest broker that it was 3-on-1 yet again. And I hope, if nothing else, that there's a segment of America that is beginning to see what we all know and feel, that all too often the legacy media has their thumb on the scale. Look, I think J.D. did well, not because he was polished and would have won a forensics tournament medal. I think he was good because he came across as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
He came across as somebody who was talking like a businessman and a dad, and he related to real problems. And I look at this. He did not, you know, as a vice presidential candidate, do no harm. So he did no harm with their supporters. I think he made a compelling case to the five Americans who are undecided and to even some people who might be soft Harris supporters. I think he explained the Trump-Vance agenda in common sense ways. I think Tim Walz came off as nervous. I think he came off as awkward and spent a lot of time hammering and yelling about 2016 and 2020, whereas Vance was talking more to the future. So I thought Vance did everything he needed to do and then some, and Walz fell short. So I thought it was JD by a knockout onto the postmortem. But I think anybody that looks at it any other way was clearly biased. Vance did everything he needed to do and then some.
Yeah. The problem is that, you know, there's bias by omission with what the moderators did and most importantly did not ask about. And so the choices of all the questions, even the way that they were worded was that shows the bias, right? And the fact that they cut his mic at a point where he was explaining things and there was a snarky little, thank you for explaining the policy or whatever was said. And so there was even that little snarky, demeaning little comment there. I just thought, wow, it was like the librarians moderate here. But your takeaway, as far as if we think about the goal of a debate, and to your point, Guy Shiraki, so the goal here for J.D. Vance, his strategy, because he's been demonized in the media, even though he's done a whole lot of interviews, he's been demonized, he has been misquoted, and so he has to come out there and ignore the media bias, ignore the moderators who are not giving him a fair shake, in my opinion. And then, so on one hand, show who he is, a little bit of hillbilly elegy, right? But on the other side, he wants to talk about Trump and why Trump's policies are better. And Guy, that's where I think it was a win, because I do think he kept talking about Trump. Here's the policy. I actually, and maybe I'm going to make some people upset, but I actually think J.D. Vance explained Trump's policies now and his proven policies as far as in the past better than Trump does at his rallies and things.
Well, I think some of the best moments that J.D. Vance had, aside from the opening, which was an A++, I think his best moments were two. One, when he explained that this race is between essentially two people that are sort of incumbents with records, because that, as you and I've discussed, and as I've written, Harris is trying to do this with the support of the media, that she's this brand new candidate that just appeared on the scene. I think J.D. Vance was very effective in saying, hey, America, despite all the noise, this is a race between two executives with records, and you can compare the two records, the economy, inflation, your take-home pay, crime, the border, the world, two different records. So I think he was at his best there, and I think he was also at his best in speaking from the heart and introducing himself. I think when he talked about living in a home, being raised by his grandmother, talking about very openly his mom's addiction, talking about having to make choices, I think that's very relatable. So, yes, he explained that this is a race where, in essence, one person's asking to be restored to the presidency, the other's being asked to be reelected, whose record merits it, and two, saying, look, I look at this race as someone that comes from a house where we really did. You know, we've heard a lot about Kamala Harris being from a middle-class family. Well, you got the distinct impression that J.D. Vance's family aspired to be middle-class, that they literally couldn't pay the bills. They were that dirt poor, and I think it was genuine. So he came across as genuine, and he framed the race as two records. That's why I think he did so exceptionally well.
I was raised by a woman who would sometimes go into medical debt so that she could put food on the table in our household.
Yeah, so thanks, Dan, for playing that clip. Let's get to Ed and Del Ran. Hey, Ed, it's Dawn and Guy Shiraki on the line.
Hello,
with you.
Hello, Dawn, hey, and Guy Shiraki, but I got a good one for you, and I'll get right into it. And that is, Dawn Stensler gave J.D. Vance more than a glance because she knows him and Trump got to advance so we can go to that real big dance.
Love you, Ed.
Hey, love you both, man. Right back at you. So listen, here's the thing. This guy, Wallet, they got along good, these two, which is amazing. And the other thing is, this guy Wallace lies like a rug. I don't know who lies more, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, or Wallace. They are the biggest freaking liars I've ever seen in my life.
Ed, thank you so much, and thanks for the rhymes. Good time, always good Ed, times and good rhymes
Wallace,
with our friend Ed.
Ed worked very hard. He practiced for that, yes, and he delivered it pretty well.
Yeah.
He did.
What I think is amazing about Walls and his lies is that, how can I put it? He has practiced his lies.
Mm-hmm.
Because this wasn't two people, as I say, you know, Walls is this guy in a bar that keeps telling stories that after a while, everybody in the bars realize that they're BS, but he keeps telling them. When he says things like, oh, I got the month confused when I was in Tiananmen Square. No reporter said to you, hey, governor, were you in Tiananmen Square in June or July? And he said July, and then he says later it was June. No, it was, he said, I was there as the revolution was taking place, as the Chinese sent tanks against humans. I witnessed that, and it moved me. That's not a case of were you there June 22nd or mm-hmm. July 22nd. He said he witnessed things that he could not have possibly witnessed with people he could have not have possibly been with because he was back home in the United States. That's not an accident.
Mm-hmm.
That's not I miss smoke, I'm a knucklehead. No, you're a liar. He keeps putting himself in places like Forrest Gump that he never was. And he does it, and you have to ask, why does he keep doing it? Everybody has a life story.
Yeah.
Some of us get to be there and see historic things. Some of us don't. Don't lie about it.
Yeah.
Why do you lie? You lie because you're trying to deceive people and tell something that's fake because you don't believe in your own true story.
Yeah, that struck me as, you know, he really got a pass by the moderators. But what struck me was, why ask him the Tiananmen Square question? Because that in that one, I think, to be very honest, it's not really as consequential as asking him about the stolen valor question. So I think that they were they had to, in their mind, they had to ask one tough question. And because now they're leading up to the final, you know, piece de la resistance for their bias, and that is J6. You know, they don't really ask about the handling of the administration of the deadly storms where you have hundreds of people still missing and presumed dead in 6 southern states. So they'd rather ask about climate change there. But I think they had to ask Walz one tough question, so they avoided asking about stolen valor or any of the other lies he told. That, I guess, is the lesser of the lies. Do you agree?
No, I think, Dawn, you've made two very, very astute insights. And one is, that is exactly what they did. They asked him a soft negative that in the end people say, who cares when he was in China,
right,
whether he was there in June or July. And secondly, as you pointed out early on, it is not so much the questions they asked, it's the questions they didn't ask. The bias was obvious when they cut off JD's mic. The bias was obvious when they said the snarky things. But the bias was not so obvious, and you picked it up. What they didn't ask, the questions they didn't frame. J.D. Vance not only had to overcome the three-on-one in what was said, he had to overcome the three-on-one in what was not asked. Tim Walz was put on the defensive once over when you were in China. You are exactly right, and the bias was much more overt, and you picked up every aspect of it, and you're doing a real service explaining it to the listeners, especially to people who are on the fence and understand what Vance and Trump are really up against.
Thanks, Guy. Can you stick around a commercial break? Because I still want to talk about your latest Broad and Liberty piece and wrap up the debate. Do you have a minute?
I do. We don't have practice till Friday, so I've got some time.
All right. More Guy Shiraki. More of your calls, 855-839-1210. We'll take a quick break. Be right back.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Last night's debate, all the breaking news today from Israel, Iran, the strike, the talks that have stalled, and a strike that impacts every one of us, and certainly in South Philadelphia, everything's pretty much quiet except for a few folks who are walking about with their signs as those union workers are on strike.
You stock up on paper towels or anything after work today?
You know, we always stock up.
Yeah?
We always stock up.
Yeah.
I have...
I legitimately asked Maisie last night, do we have enough toilet paper to get through this? And we just went to Costco last weekend and got a huge thing, so...
Yeah, we always have the stockpiles. Yeah. Guy Shiraki, are you all stocked up?
I can neither confirm nor deny that my wife made a run to Acme yesterday.
Yeah, and the thing...
We're harkening back to 2020, right?
Yeah.
You know, race out and get all the toilet paper, tissues, napkins, and canned goods, right?
Well, if this strike continues, that's just it. I don't know that... I think the stores have stocked up on items like paper towels. I think it's more about perishables, so bananas, fresh fruit, meat, things of that nature. But the longer the strike goes on, we're on day two right now, but with the ports, you know, shut down like this, you bring up a great point. It will remind people of the pandemic because we sometimes forget too soon. And so it will remind us all of the Democrat run shutdowns in places like here in Pennsylvania. Remember, Pennsylvanians came out in full force and we loudly voted against the overreach of then Governor Tom Wolf. So to your point, which is a good one, maybe it is a reminder to people of what happened once the Democrats were in control at the state level and then the national, the federal level, and how they kind of used the pandemic beyond and overreached, right, to control all of our lives and our kids' lives.
Yeah, and heaven forbid a week from now when we see things are missing or the prices spike, because, again, for those of us that understand common sense or paid attention for 5 minutes in economics class, it's supply and demand. And if your local store is used to having 1,000 rolls of toilet paper and suddenly has 100, they're going to have to charge more because there's less of it and the supply is not coming. So it's going to teach us again about inflation, about empty store shelves. And again, I would remind folks, in a state where we live, where the number one industry is still agriculture, much of the food that is produced in Pennsylvania is eaten by Pennsylvanians and our neighbors, but some is shipped. Some of the things our farmers grow that need to go to places like Canada or Mexico or the islands or even Europe are not going to get there. So once again, like with COVID, where our farmers are going to get the short end of the stick. This is real life. Family farms in Chester County, Lancaster County, Montgomery County, Berks County, once again, are going to be in the short end of it. And this is going to be a painful reminder of them, many of whom have still not fully recovered from 2020 and 2021. Any interruption in their money, in their ability to trade and make money, is another hit against them that run family farms.
Guy Shiraki, thank you so much for sticking around two segments. We really appreciate you today. I know you have to run because you do have an 11 o'clock. Thank you, Guy.
All good. Thanks for the opportunity, and thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about softball and to pretend that I'm leading off for the Phillies.
You can only dream. You too.
Amen. Thanks,
Guy.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.